to repeat very, very briefly what we said last week, and we're going to continue on from there. And there's a great deal that we have to say today, and I just hope I'm going to cover as much as I can. So you just better listen in. The shiur is based on a one-word question: why? Why did Israel have to go the horrible experience of Egypt? The slavery, the persecution, the torture, the Jewish children thrown into the Nile. Why was this necessary? We know, of course, that it was part of a divine plan. God had already told Avraham Avinu at the Brit Bein HaBetarim, the covenant between the parts. He already told him, Yodo HaTeda, you should know, Ki Ger Yehazarach HaBe'eretz Lolohem, your children are going to be strangers in a land that's not theirs, Va'avodum, they will enslave them, and not only enslave them, V'inuotam, and they're going to torture them for 400 years. But you should know, God says, I will judge that nation, V'acharechen, and afterwards Yetzu, V'ruchush Gato, afterwards they're going to go out with great wealth. So we know that this is all part of a divine plan. If it's part of a divine plan, then it behooves us to ask, why was all of this necessary? Jews were already in Eretz Yisrael. God could have established a Jewish national entity with the children of Yaakov right there in Zion. Who needed all of this? Who needed it all? The Abar Pinehu, we only mentioned the first part of what he says, but we didn't get into the heart of what he says. Abar Pinehu says we have to look at it either as punishment for something, and if it's not punishment for something, then the divine plan must have some kind of rhyme and reason behind it. So what we said so far, we learned last week, we learned the Ramban. The Ramban in Parashat Lech Lecha, who says that, take a look, there's such a similar pattern by Avraham Avinu. He comes to Eretz Yisrael, there's a famine, he goes down to Egypt, he's in a sense held captive there. God brings all sorts of miraculous punishment upon Paro. And then he goes out with great wealth. The Ramban takes a look at the pattern. It fits. It fits so perfectly. So therefore, it must be related to Avraham Avinu. If it's related to Avraham Avinu, so he says, most probably he is, or his children are being punished because Avraham shouldn't have gone down to Egypt, though there was a famine in the land. He should not have placed his wife in such grave danger. But what we see from the Ramban, and by the way, that's not the end, the total picture of the Ramban. But what we see from the Ramban is, if you find a similar pattern, and he found what seems to be a very, very similar pattern. The same thing. And of course, the Ramban explains most of Sefer Bereishit, that whatever happened to the fathers was the indication of what was going to happen to the children. They are the ones who prepared the way, they paved the way for their children. So therefore he sees that there's a direct relationship between the Avraham experience and the Mitzrayim experience. We also learned the Nitziv. The Nitziv takes us in a completely different direction. At the beginning of Parashat Shemot it says, Sati Malei Ha'aretz Ofam, the land became full of Jews. Not only were they living in Goshen, but they poured over and spilled out into Mitzrayim itself. And there he develops the idea that was, of course, extremely significant for him in his time, and I believe it's most probably very significant for us in our time. We're not going to become full-fledged members in the family of nations. By the way, if you can choose your family, and here's a unique circumstances where you can choose your family, I don't know if I'd want to be a member of the mishpocha. There's a lot of, there's a lot of not nice matters in that mishpocha. But he says that the Jews are going to attempt to mix and to mingle, which ultimately is going to mean assimilation into marriage, and we think that by being close to them, we're going to live next door to them, we're going to engage in all sorts of activities with them, they're going to like us. So the Netziv says precisely the opposite. The closer you get to them, the more they're going to despise you. And then we learn the great Netziv on the words of Bilam, Am levada yishdon uvakoyim lo yitchashav, a people that dwells alone and is not counted amongst the nations of the world. And the Netziv gives his own unique peyush, Am levada, if the people is alone, if they're separate, if they're distinct, yishdon, then they're going to be able to dwell in the world. Uvakoyim, but if they want to become part of the nations of the world, lo yitchashav, they are not going to be considered. On the contrary, they are going to become hated and hunted and despised and persecuted. So that's a second approach. And of course, he proves that Jews lived side by side with the Egyptians. Because the whole story of the night of Pesach is that God has to pass over from one house to the next. One house is an Egyptian, the next house is a Jew. If they would have all remained in the land of Goshen as a distinct unit, all that happened may not have happened. That's one way of looking at it. Isn't that what Paro himself said? There's so many. They're all around. We then began to learn the Medrash Tanchuma, that big Medrash over there. Let me take you through that Medrash in brief. You're just going to have to... I'll tell you what the Medrash says. You know, we'll only read one section, but I'll tell you what the Medrash says. Medrash says, these are the names of the children of Israel that came down to Egypt with Yaakov. It's all based on one pasuk. Chosev Shifto Some. You know, I told you, this pasuk you have to learn by the end of the Shia. You have to know this pasuk. You can impress people if you can say this pasuk in the original. Chosev Shifto Some. The one who withholds the speck from a child, ultimately will end up hating his son. That's how the Medrash is going to learn. V'ohavo, you want to love him, and if you really do love him, shi'aro musar, you are going to admonish him, you're going to chastise him, you're going to give him guidance and direction, even though it may be painful to you and to him. Life isn't a bowl of cherries. Children need to be educated. And education isn't something that is simply handed on a silver platter. It's not a bowl of cherries. And therefore, ohavo, if you want to love him, and you really love a child, shikaro musar. You have to give him musar. Okay. And the Medrash goes on to describe a number of Gedolei Olam who didn't do that, and they suffered because of it. They begin with Avram. And of course, we can relate very much to that. The fact that Avram didn't educate Yishmael, and we're suffering for that up until the present day. If only he would have done a job on Yishmael, but it wasn't in the cards. Doesn't mean that the children that came after were all Chosrei B'tshuva.
It's no guarantee.
Huh?
It's no guarantee.
There's no guarantee.
Well,
So he did tshuva. So Yishmael did tshuva. Meanwhile, he had children all over that did not become balei tshuva.
Not tshuva.
Yeah. Don't be too impressed by the idea that he did tshuva. So there was a moment over there at his father's funeral that he realized that Yitzchak is greater than he is. Okay, I believe it's about tshuva and Gevara, you understand.
What about educating the son to his ability?
What about educating
his child
and
their ability?
His child? Of course.
Maybe he had no
ability. Well, that's so racist. I mean, you know, if you would say. I can't even repeat it because we'll be condemned in all of the left-wing papers of the country. He didn't have ability. Think like this. Even if one doesn't have ability, but everybody has the ability to be decent and to be good and to be humane. And here it says that he taunted Yitzchak. He became a terrible influence on Yitzchak, and Sarah wouldn't stand for it, and Sarah had the strength and the guts to tell Avram, get rid of this woman and her other child. He sent them away, and the Medrash says, do you think that Avram had nothing more to give her when he sent them out? Nothing more to give her than a loaf of bread and a canteen of water? The man was wealthy. Why didn't he give her more? Why did they end up out in the desert and there's no water left anymore? Because he despised Ishmael. Choseif shifto, the Medrash says. Choseif shifto. The one who withholds the rod so is going to end up hating the son. Because the next example is Esav. It says at the beginning the Farshas told us that Yitzchak loved Esav. By the way, it says over there in present tense, the Rivka, and Rivka loves Yaakov. Yitzchak, it says in past tense that he loved Esau. You know why it's in past tense, according to the Medrash? Because the end is that he despised him. But the Medrash seems to be saying, you know, we don't have to take it literally, that Yitzchak did not educate him the way he should have. I have difficulty in saying it out of my mouth because the fact is that Yitzchak showed so much patience and so much love. But the end is, maybe there was something more that could have been done. Kiyotzipo, the third example that the Medrash brings, David. David had two children, out of the many, but two children, whom he didn't admonish, whom he didn't chastise. He had two children that simply needed a great deal more of attention and didn't get it. And the two of them were Avshalom and Adoniyot ben Hagit. Adoniyot, we read that Adoniyot ben Hagit is the one that has, it seems as though the sun is setting on the life of David. He is the one who gathers his friends around him and lets out the word that Adoniyahu is king without his father's permission. And there, that first chapter in Sefer Melachim, Bathsheba comes to David, and she gets David to act, and he rises like a lion with his last strength, and he puts down the rebellion by anointing and appointing Shlomo to be king. There the Pasuk says, at the beginning of Melachim, an unbelievable Pasuk. The Pasuk says, V'lo atzavo aviv miyamav. His father, all of his days, never made him unhappy. V'lo atzavo aviv miyamav. You understand? The Pasuk clearly is condemning David. That he never said anything to Adoniyahu that would have made him feel bad. It's blessing was spoiled. Our shalom too was spoiled. And therefore, a son rebels against the father. You know what it means? It means even more. It means if you're going to be good to the kids, they're going to really like you. You know what it really means? You're going to be good to the kids. Chosei shifto. I'm just thinking of a new shot. The one who holds the rod, so may the know his son hates him. Isn't that a nice pshat? The medrash and the usual pshat is the one who withholds, spare the rod, so may the know the father ultimately hates the son. You know what? It can also mean the son begins to hate the father. On some level, why didn't you set boundaries for me? Why didn't you teach me what's right and what's wrong? I like that. I'm going to make sure about that one of these days.
Maybe he thinks his father doesn't love him.
So you know what he's saying? Not just saying. Maybe he thinks his father doesn't love him. And the father doesn't admonish him so that the son should love him. So what really happens over here, nobody's doing the right thing. If I'll be nice to him, whenever he wants allowance, I'll give him allowance. Whatever he wants to do, he'll love me. The end is, it's not so. He's going to hate you. Right. Now, if you take a look in the column on the left-hand side. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the top. It's underlined. This is the second half of the Medrash. The first half of the Medrash was talking about the one who does not admonish his son will hate his son. Now the Medrash goes the other way around and says, for Ohavo, the second half of the Pasuk is the one who truly loves a child, Shicharo Musar, is going to find ways to instruct him. That's also Avram, just as we used Avram as an example of somebody who did not educate Yishmael, but on the other hand, he did a good job with Yitzchak. Some people don't win them all. Say Avram.
Yes, sorry.
All right. You know, if we're just saying a nice thing about Avram, let it be. She said about to raise Yitzchak, he had sorrow with her. By the way, truth is that you're not wrong.
You need to.
You're not wrong. You need to. So I like that. I agree with you. I got out of that one. This is Avraham. She yiseh et Yitzchak. The Lindo Tatora Yehovah Rachav, this Avram, who admonished Yitzchak, taught him Torah. The word admonish is not a, you see, the word Yisar, and this is going to be very important, the word Yisar comes from the word Yisudim. Now sometimes we think that Yisudim only means suffering, torture, punishment. It comes really from the root Musar. Musar is really, it is to give Musar, to teach. Now sometimes teaching may even require pain. Not necessarily pain that's inflicted by somebody else. We'll see. There may be pain. It's painful to grow up. And even after you grow up, there's pain. Pain is part of the process of growth. No pain,
no gain.
No gain. No pain,
no pain,
no growth. That's what we're talking about. Yisurim, that's what we mean. And you can see how the Medrash, the finale, the grand finale of the Medrash. Anyway, here he says, Avram, he taught Yitzchak. It says, Eikev Hashashon Avram Bekoli Vayishmur Shmarti. And it says, Eilech hold up Yitzchak and Avram, Avram hold up Yitzchak. L'lamed choshava yodom el'ovim b'kol davar. Yitzchak was the son of Avram. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. the repetition in Torah is to tell us that Yitzchak was the mirror image of Avraham. And Avraham created somehow in his own image. He was similar to his father, benoi, in beauty, wisdom, strength, wealth, ubnas in tovim, and good deeds. And they prove it. Take a look. At the time of the Akedah, he was 37 years old. And he was ready. He was ready to undergo the Akedah. Ready to undergo the Akedah. Then the Medrash is going to go on to the next one and says Yitzchak. So he had an Esav, but he also had a Yaakov. And this Yaakov became the image of Yitzchak. He taught him Torah, he gave him direction. He formed him, he forged him, he made him. That's Ohavo Shicharo Musar. If you love him, you admonish him. Everything that Yitzchak learned from his father, he taught to Yaakov. V'achakach Amri, in a few lines later, it says, Peirach Miyavotav, when Yaakov left his father, Nitman Beit Eidel Lulmo Torah, he hid in the house of Eidel to study Torah. Leficha Zorah, Zorah, that's what he was Zorah, to inherit Eretz Yisrael. Same thing is true, Eile Shmot, Bnei Yisrael. These are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt. Reuben, Shimon, Levi. You know why their names are mentioned again? The Medrash says they were all the image of Yaakov. Yaakov was the first one in history to succeed with the whole family. Was it painful? Or he was raising those 12 children painful. When they were young, when they were then Zazan Given claim, the Given claim it's on us. But when they grew up, they should give them so this you understand. Yaakov Avinu raised 12 children who turned out to
don't be
at
senses.
Who does she mean by 13? Dina. I could have thought that she was including Menashe and Ephraim. So in addition to the 12 tribes, Dina. Okay? And I said, I'm getting hurt today. They know that I'm not feeling well, so they're going after me. A whole bunch of them. Yaakov Avinu raised 13 children. 12 boys and Dina Kineget Kulam. He's going to go on to tell you that David HaMelech had an Avshalom. And he had an Antonio ben Chagid, but he also had a Shlomo HaMelech. Now I want to take you to the finale of the Medrash. It's underlined. Tanya. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Omer. Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, this is at the beginning of Sefer Shemot, you understand, a Medrash at the beginning of Sefer Shemot. A famous, famous statement of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Rav Shimon bar Yochai Omer at Motza, you find Sholosh Matanas Tovot Natana Kodesh Baruch Hu Yisrael, the three good gifts that God gave to the Jewish people. V'lo Notan Otam Ela Yedei Yisurim, he gave them only through suffering, through pain. Famous, famous Gemara. HaTorah, Ve'eretz Yisrael, Ve'olam Haba. These are the three great gifts that God gave to the Jewish people. Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba, and all of them come only through suffering. And then the Medrash goes on to bring us Pesukim for the Torah, because it says, Ashi Ageva, fortune is the man Asher to Yasrenu, that God will cause him to suffer. And by the way, we have to find a better word than suffer. Because it always leaves the impression of punishment. But it is pain. Pain is better than suffering. There must be even a better word. Three great gifts that God gave to the Jewish people, and all of them are acquired only through hard work and pain. Nobody receives those gifts handed to them. By the way, this is my doomsday statement of the rabbis. I'll explain. There was a period of time when I was indeed suffering, that somebody would tell me, well, listen, Rabbi, you know, it's just all nicknames by the day you saw them. That I didn't kill 10 people during that period of time, instead. It was a matter of great self-control. Yeah. God tell me. Okay. But I use this statement of the rabbis now. You know, every so often, people will tell me, it's not such an important mitzvah, you know. It's only a mitzvah, a kiyumet, it's not a mitzvah chiyuvet, it's not obligatory, it's heen, and it's air. And today, there are a bunch of tzigayim over there, you know, the upper kursim, the kaifrim, you know, this whole Shabbos, and the kaifrim, and, you meet these people who have every sick excuse in the world. And so I used it on one occasion publicly, have you ever heard anybody who says to the Rebbe Shlomo, listen, he gave us a great mitzvah, a great gift called Torah. No, thank you. I don't really want your great gift, you know. One can even quote Mishle Sone Matonos Yichya, the one who hates gifts will live. And why, you know, for you ever keep your gift. Have you ever heard anybody say, Olam Haba, that's really terrific. Olam Haba, it's great. It's a great gift, you know, but no thank you to my Mishle. God forbid, you're kidding me? Tyra! Eretz, Olam Haba, Olam Haba. And who knows how many phony people can walk around and say, Benjamin, you gave us a good gift called Eretz Yisrael. Keep your gift. I'm mindful of the gift. It's unbelievable. Usually, when I say this to somebody and I choose them well, the guy turns green, red, pale, white. Sholosh Matanas Tomas, Rav Shimon Ben Yochai. And by the way, the same fellow who feels this way that he's Michael, the big Matan of Eretz Yisrael, most probably celebrates Lag BaOmer. You understand? The yard site of Rav Shimon Ben Yochai. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. By the Medrash bringing this at the end of this introduction to Sefer Shmos, you know what the Medrash is telling us? The Medrash is telling us that in the process of the Mitzrayim experience, Jews were being prepared in the crucible of suffering and pain to be able to receive Torah, to be worthy of Eretz Yisrael, to ultimately inherit Olam Haba. The Mitzrayim experience was not one in which God wanted Jews to suffer. What he wanted is that they should acquire Ruchush Gadol, great wealth. And all great wealth is only going to come through the crucible, the purifying crucible. And we're going to, that's what we're elaborating on now. Yes?
All right.
Then you're going to make me run ahead of myself. Oh, okay. So I will run ahead of myself. Because I simply will not permit this year to go into a third inning. And you know, whatever I have left, we can say next year. Yes, Hashem, it's okay. It's an amazing, a very beautiful, a powerful essay by Rav Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha. There's one little section of it that we talked about some years ago, but we're going to take the major section of this essay.
Which one?
He asks all that.
What's the essay? Called
Odi? No, it's not called Odi. Even though there are references to it in Koldo V, but no. You may see Karon. Beginning on page 92. I'll tell you what the cost is. He begins by asking the question of, yes, why did Jews have to go through the salt process? Why did they have to go through the sign process? Who needed it? The Jews were an Eretz Yisrael. God could establish a Jewish political independent entity right there on the spot. Why did they have to come back from its hiding? Why not this way?
Why did they have to go down?
This is the question that we're dealing with. Then he, of course, asks, and this also we've talked about at a number of different levels in the past. God tells Avraham, they're going to suffer for 400 years, they're going to be enslaved. I'm going to judge the people who enslaved them. And afterwards they're going to go out with great wealth. There's some kind of a sour note over here, as though the suffering of 400 years and Jewish children thrown into the Nile, it's all worth it, because at the end we're going to go out only stocked with gold and silver. That's the Chov, I think I remember saying, well, what did they need? They needed the shmatas of Mitzrayim, you understand? The clothing of Mitzrayim. Next year, most probably, it'll be out of style. So this is the Rechush Gadol, and this makes it all worthwhile. We're going to go through this horrible experience, but the end is, oh boy, there won't be an overdraft in the bank. Of course it can't mean that. So he basically what he says on the Zohar. We know, of course, we say it in the Haggadah, Arami Oyvei Avi, Lavan wanted to destroy my father. He went down to Egypt. And what happened in Egypt? They became Goy Gadol. They became a great nation. God is going to give Eretz Yisrael to a Goy Gadol, a great nation. He's going to give Torah, not to individuals, not to a family, not to 12 or 13, with their parents and grandchildren. Torah is going to be given to a people, to an Am, to a Goy Gadol. And where do they become a Goy Gadol? They become a Goy Gadol in Mitzrayim. And the Zohar says the following. Before they went out of Egypt, they were not a great nation. It's only when they went out of Egypt that they could be considered a great nation. And the Zohar uses a pasuk from Shir HaShirim, Kishov Shanar Bein HaChalchim, Kein Ra'ayati Bein HaBanot. Like a rose amongst the thorns, so is my beloved amongst the daughters, all of the nations of the world. And the Zohar says, a rose grows best amongst the thorns, because the thorns don't need much nourishment, so all of the nourishment that's available goes straight to the rose. The most beautiful rose grows amongst the thorns.
Are the thorns the Egyptians or the people amongst the Israelites who were mixing up with the other people?
Well, the Shoshana Be'achofen. For the Jews who come out of Egypt, the Goy Gadol that comes out of Egypt, they are the rose that comes from amongst the thorns. And here the love is, says the Father, in order for one to truly appreciate and understand with every fiber of his being what is good, what's the definition of good, one has to come face to face with absolute evil. In order to be able to appreciate what is sanctity and purity, one has to go through the experience of that which is defiled and that which is ugly. God created a world that one can say, one can say that God uses the example of colors in order to appreciate certain colors. You have to put two different colors, one next to the other, and then you can see the difference and can appreciate one over the other. He says to create the kind of people that the Bnei Yisrael has wanted to give Torah to them. He needed a people that would be able to truly understand what's good and what's evil. They needed the Beit Sefer, the greatest school for the Jewish people, was a school called Mitzrayim. Came face to face with absolute barbarity and cruelty. And by coming face to face with that, they are going to emerge from Mitzrayim as a great people. In order for a human being to be able to identify with good, and that he should be able to experience and truly appreciate what is meant by good, what's meant by beautiful, what is exalted, it only comes as a result of comparing and contrasting with the complete opposite. The complete opposite. Goy Godol, a great nation or a big nation, doesn't mean a nation with military power, with numbers. Goy Godol is a people with great moral and spiritual strength. And that's what Klal Yisrael is going to achieve in Mitzrayim. The Rechush Gadol, the great wealth that they come out of Egypt with, is not the Shvatos of Mitzrayim. It's not that at all. They have gone through an experience that is going to change the nature of the Jewish people markedly until the end of time. We have in our genes, and we don't want to admit it because sometimes we get the feeling that, we're such a special people. Yes, we are a special people. We are a special people. Despite the fact that there was an article, was it yesterday or 2 days ago? Yes, I don't want that on the tape. Where somebody defended the chief rabbi of England on his latest book, where I was involved in that struggle, and for different reasons. We have to appreciate it, just like there's Jewish truth, there's Christian truth, there's Muslim truth. Ochenvei, Muslim truth. We're being killed and slaughtered by Muslim truth. And we were killed and slaughtered throughout history by Christian truth. All the same. That's right. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. All the same. Unbelievable. Now, but if you want to be a liberal and you want to be accepted by the whole world, you have to be able to talk in terms of the unity of all of mankind. There is no unity. We're not part of the unity. They don't want us. I cut that off, and that was very painful. That was with you, Susan. I'm having difficulty with that. In Mitzrayim, Klal Yisrael underwent an experience that was going to change them dramatically for all of history. That's what happened. And then the Chof Tate goes one step further. And this one step further is very important. He says, Lo Tirzach, thou shalt not kill. Anybody would assume that Lo Tirzach, it is so basic and so fundamental, Torah wouldn't even have to tell us about Lo Tirzach, thou shalt not kill. And then he says, but take a look. It's not so easily accepted by people in the world. Not only it's not so easily accepted in the world, the brothers of Yosef were ready to do just that. Lechu v'nahargehu, let's go and kill him. Lo tilich Rachel ba'amecho, you should not go amongst your people and speak evil of one another, seems to be such a fundamental rule of human conduct. What do you mean, walking around besmirching people? I don't know. Yosef doesn't seem to have understood that fully. He brings evil talk of his brothers to his father. Pasuk in Torah that says, Lo tisne dochicha bilvavecha, you shall not hate your brother in your heart. So simple, so clear, what are you talking about? Hate. Perish the thought. Banish the feeling. What about the brothers of Yosef? Vayosifu ob lesno oto. They hated him because of his dreams. Gedolei Olam, giants, great people, educated in the house of Yaakov Avinu. Yet they don't fully appreciate the meaning of what seems to be so fundamental, so fundamental. In order that Jews for all time should be able to fully understand and appreciate the death of Lo Tirzach, you shall not kill. Lo Telech Rahu, you shall not be a talebearer. Lo Tisne Bachicha Bilvavecha. You know what has to happen? They're going to have to come face to face with it. Of all the homes into which Yosef is sold in Mitzrayim, it's for the house of Potiphar. You know who Potiphar was? He was the chief executioner in Egypt. I can imagine the Rav describing it. He lives in a house where he most probably has to watch how Potiphar, surrounded by a bloodthirsty mass of people, he pulls the trapdoor and watches as people are hung until they're dead. And the crowd is cheering. And Yosef is watching this. Yosef is brought in to the worst house in all of Egypt, where he's going to see cruelty and brutality unparalleled and unmatched. Evil reports. He brought evil reports. Poor Yosef finds himself in the house of Potiphar, accused by his wife. It's a blood libel. Accused by the wife of Potiphar. Never did it. Never did it. And there he is. It's a lie. But nobody cares. He doesn't even have the opportunity to plead his case. And what about his brothers? They come down and Yosef accuses them of being spies. You know, it's a lie. Oh, are they suffering? Everybody is suffering. Everybody is suffering. Yosef is the one who finally has to provide for all of Egypt. For the whole world. He sees a world turned into slaves. Turned into slaves. You know what he's going to learn? You know what he's going to learn from all of this? When your brother falls, assist him, help him. Don't close your hand, don't close your heart. Human beings have to be taken care of. You have to provide for them. There shouldn't be any hungry in the world. There shouldn't be illness in the world. Most probably we would call this the school of hard knocks. Klal Yisrael, Yosef and his brothers, and all of Klal Yisrael, are going to get a PhD in humanity, in feeling, in sensitivity. Mitzvah after mitzvah is zecher liyetziat mitzvah, a commemoration of the Egypt experience. What's the Chof really saying? He's really said two things. But the two things are one. I start out by saying that there are those whose approach to the whole Mitzrayim experience is its punishment. Rabbi Tannen, for example, said it's punishment for Avraham who went down to Egypt. Okay, it's punishment. Then there are those who say it's not punishment. The Parvenel gives two approaches. One of them is very close to what the Chaz says is very close to the Abarbanel. The Abarbanel says, I'll just give you a few choice pieces. Take a look, it's amazing. He says the following. You don't have it. Don't look, I have my own notes. I don't give you everything. Because you'd see the Abarbanel, you'd be terrified. You'd leave. Such small print, and he says he makes the parallel between the story of Yosef and his brothers and the Egypt experience. And here the parallel, by the way, is perfect. They sell their brother into slavery where? To Egypt. They're going to be sold into slavery in Egypt. They cast him into the pit. In Egypt, called Haben Hayilon, every child who will be born, Hayaoro Tashbihu, thrown into the Nile. They sent him down to Mitzrayim. They had to go down to Mitzrayim. He became a slave. They became slaves. He suffered. They suffered. He takes every step of the whole Yosef story with his brothers, and it's all paralleled by what happens to the Jewish people in Egypt. And he goes even further, he says some fascinating things. At one point he disagrees with something that our rabbis say, I wouldn't say disagree, he considers it the homiletics. He wonders why does everybody have to suffer because of the Yosef's sale? Everybody suffers. Why does everybody have to suffer? So he says, well, let's take a look. Reuven tried to save him, but Reuven still carried guilt to begin with. Avol Hashem Alanachnu, they said, we're all guilty. We're all guilty. All that Reuven was able to do was save him, that he shouldn't be killed, but he was part of those who hated him. He despised him. Just like the brothers did. He says, what about Yosef? Why do Yosef's children suffer in this time? He says, because he also carries part of the guilt. He brought an evil report to his father. He also carries. Yaakov carries guilt. He should have insinuated himself, and more than that, he favored Yosef, and by favoring Yosef, he set the stage of the groundwork. He makes for him the Ketonet Pasim. But here, just as an aside, he says, since the sin of Yosef and Yaakov was less than the sin of the others, Yaakov and Yosef, he says, are the only ones who are buried in Eretz Yisrael. So they didn't jump. Because Chazal say all of the tribes were buried in Eretz Yisrael. He says that's Trash. No. The only ones about whom it says clearly that they were buried in Eretz Yisrael, Yaakov and Yosef. And then he says, take a look at what happened. They had used a goat to fool their father that Joseph was dead. They became enslaved to a people that worshipped the Aes and its own. And their ultimate kapor is going to come with Korban Pesach, when they're able to slaughter the the Aes. Unbelievable. And then he takes a completely different approach. He says, maybe there's another way to look at it all. It's not punishment, but there's an objective. There are two objectives. Objective one is that the Jewish people should learn about God, that He exists, that His divine providence is inextricably intertwined with Jewish history, and that he is there and able to be present for Klal Yisrael when they need him. And for the Egyptians, we'll take a look at this week's Seder. It says a number of things. By every one of the Makos, it says, Leman Teda, so you should know, Ki Ani Hashem Berayim Gav. Leman Teda, so that you should know, Ki Ani Hashem Bekerev Haaretz, I am God in the midst of the land. Leman Teda, so that you should know, Ki Ein Kamoni, there is none like me. God is sending great messages to the Jewish people and the Egyptians through the Mixian experience. I'll tell you what I want to say. What I want to add to this whole picture is the following. There are really two approaches. One looks at it like punishment, and one looks at it like instruction. Punishment, what seems to be punishment, takes the form of instruction. And sometimes instruction has to be done through what is suffering. That's what the Medrash is telling us. The big Medrash. The big Medrash is telling us one might look at certain experiences as though it's punishment. It's not punishment. By the way, God never just inflicts pain for the sake of inflicting pain. All pain is for the purpose of growth. God isn't cruel. Do we grow from it? Whether we grow from it or not depends on how we are going to look at it. That already is the love in Kol Dodi, in Kol Dodi Dofek. And you know what? I will say that in the ultimate sense, the Rav wouldn't have asked the question that the last two shurim have been about, why? The Rav writes, when never tragedy strikes, the Jew doesn't ask why, because he knows that there's no way whatsoever he'll ever find out. You know what the Jew asks himself? What am I supposed to do with it? How am I going to turn this experience into something of value? How am I going to take this negative, terrible experience and turn it into something that is positive, that has the great seeds of growth in it? Klal Yisrael, through the experience of Mitzrayim, emerge as a goy gadol. You know what Klal Yisrael are? The rose amongst the thorns. It grows most beautiful when it is amongst the thorns. All of the nurturing, those experiences should last Klal Yisrael for all of history. But I'll tell you, there's a condition. The condition is, as long as one sees himself as part of the covenantal community of Klal Yisrael. If you step out of that community, then not only will you have lost all of the great wealth of human experience and human feeling, but one can turn into somebody absolutely cruel. And unfortunately, we have these experiences every day. I mean, we have experience every day, you know. If I'm going to start talking about everything that upsets me, first of all, I'll upset you all. There's all the English that are people. We need, you understand, and this we'll have to talk about at greater length, that art can be something that glorifies a lady shahid, all right? That's one for women, you understand? A lady shahid. How do you like that? No, what I'm saying is, there's absolutely quality. Why? Now they're going to enlist more women. Why should it have to be only limited to the men? And this is art. And then I read the papers, And I think we're crazy people. We're crazy people. Freedom of expression. What are you talking about? What did that ambassador in Sweden do? Doesn't he understand what freedom of expression means? You can express yourself and say anything. Ah, but if never a prime minister is killed, so then all of those who opposed his policies are denied the right of free expression. All of a sudden, no, 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 words can kill. Works of art can also kill. But no. When you step out of the covenantal community, what happens is the Kopf wird sich dreht. You're no longer the repository or the one who inherits all this profound understanding of beauty, of morality, of ethics. Doesn't work. Klal Yisrael went through an experience, and why is Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim so fundamental to all of Torah? And why the whole door of the door in every generation, Chayav Adam Lidotat Atzmo, a person has to see himself as though he went out of Egypt? And why on the night of the Seder, Matchil Vignut, you have to go through the story of the pain and the suffering? So you should relive it. And if you relive it, you know what's going to happen? You are going to maintain your contact with all that Klal Yisrael learned in their bodies, in their souls, during that whole experience. So the whole experience wasn't a waste. Wasn't a waste. It was not punishment. Not punishment. It was instruction. And there are certain things that require, well, painful instruction. Shosh, Matanos, Tolos, God is ready to give three great gifts to the Jewish people. And Kulam Amitwel, Ayyadei Yisurim. And thank God, at least we here are able to embrace all three of them and say, Rabbi Yishlela, thank you for Torah, thank you for Eretz Yisrael, and thank you for Olam Haba. We can say more. We don't differentiate between one and the other. The whole Mitzrayim experience is an education. There's no such thing as God bringing suffering just for the sake of suffering. No such thing. Everything is instruction. Chosei Shifto, so many people know. That's what the Medrash is saying. You should know that the whole Mitzrayim experience that's going to be described in Sefer Shemos falls under the category of a father, as the Pasuk says in Dvarim, Kikasher Yaseh Ish Et Beno, as a man admonishes and chastises, is his son, Kain Hashem Elkecha Miyasecha. So too God chastises and admonishes you. So it's not simply some kind of a random experience. It's an experience that goes to the heart of all of Jewish consciousness throughout the ages. That's it. I answer that one very simply. I don't know.
That's what you should ask. Because
no.
It doesn't make any sense in any category.
Given our behavior in the